Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, listener. Welcome to Switch It, the cricket podcast that's long overdue a tap on the shoulder. Did you see this one coming, or did it crash through your defences like a wobble ball bowled by the man himself? Yes, James Anderson is retiring from Test cricket, although England's King of the Swingers will look to bend proceedings to his will one more time against West Indies at Lord's in July. 21 years and 700 wickets on from his debut at the same ground. As with all long-running sagas, the finale is going to be hotly anticipated. But what about the subplots and intrigue? Will there be tears? Can he get the 9 wickets required to overtake Shane Warne? Who can step up to take his place, not to mention that of Stuart Broad, who retired after England's last home test? And were the England management right to tell Anderson his time was up? Joining me in the studio to mull these questions and more are two men for whom the sweet release of retirement is still a long, long way off. ESPN Cricket Info Assistant Editor Matt Waller and Associate Editor Vish Hantaraja. Good to see you, chaps. Speaking of sudden departures, we had to have a late call-up because Andrew Miller sconed himself in the nets last night. Hopefully he'll be on the next pod with a prize-winning shiner to show for it.
I think he needs a tap on the shoulder.
We're not dragging him away for a long time. Another quiet week on the county circuit. We'll perhaps discuss the Kookaburra. Or maybe not. Matt, I'll come to you first because, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think you can remember a world pre-James Anderson.
Not really, no. I'm sort of thinking back earliest cricket memories. I just about remember 05 Ashes, and obviously Anderson was 2 years into his international career by that point. It's suddenly quite... it feels like it's been coming a long time, but suddenly, as we were saying off camera, to have lost Stuart Broad and James Anderson in effectively back-to-back home tests and in the space of under a year... England, suddenly all of that succession planning that has or hasn't happened over a long period of time is going to be put to the test, and there's obviously a long list of bowlers in the queue who are going to be competing for places, and remains to be seen which of them emerges and gets the nod at Lord's and beyond. But suddenly England's incredibly experienced attack is going to go to looking very, very different, pretty much, well, not quite overnight, but near enough. It's going to be very, very different when you think of, I don't know how many times have England gone into a home test with neither Broad or Anderson in the past decade. I think maybe none.
There was a time in 2012 when they tried some succession planning and rested them both for the Edgbaston West Indies test and played Graham Onions, Stephen Finn and Tim Bresnan.
So they're ready to go, are they, later in the summer?
Exactly.
All three retired players.
It's all in hand. We'll get into all that definitely over the next half an hour or so. Vish, what were you up to in May
2003? What was I doing? My AS levels, I think. I think I was preparing for my AS levels. So what? There was 17 at the time, yeah. I don't even really think I was into cricket. See, because 2005 did it, obviously. It's wild, really. Yeah, I think it's a bit more pronounced in that James Anderson has been such a constant that you kind of forget all the different phases of, you know, the white ball stuff under lights in, you know, the World Cup.
Which was even earlier.
Yeah, and then you kind of think of, like, the test bowler as, like, the dad of that player in terms of someone who was just more mature, and you regard him in that, you know, in those tones, and the fact that people have been writing this retirement piece about him for about 10 years now, which he alluded to in his tail-enders slot when he was talking about his retirement. But it kind of feels right. Like, I think it's obviously going to be an incredibly emotional occasion. But I think because of how the last 18 months have panned out for him, the emotion has kind of gone. Certainly from my perspective, I don't see it as a shock in the same way that Broad's was, because Broad's was a bit more orchestrated because he was Stuart Broad. Whereas with Anderson, I think there was a sadness, actually, with, I suppose, how the Ashes went. Little things like how Chris Woakes was given that second, you know, that new ball after ball change at the Oval. There was already a handing over of the cape, I suppose, because James Anderson was supposed to be the superhero. That had already happened, and so I suppose there's a bit of an inevitability to this announcement, and also, you know, fair play. Like, I think it's of all the people who, you know, of all the kinds of players that deserve an orchestrated send-off, I think Jibby's one of them.
Yeah, we knew it was coming, but it doesn't make it any easier to play in some ways. The story was broken on Friday afternoon.
Which he loved.
Yes, you could tell that, talking with tail enders, reference to it being taken out of the sands, which I guess we can all understand. The Guardian's Ali Martin, and as reported, like so much in the current England test setup, it all started on a golf course, although it sounds like, Matt, that the truth is actually a bit more prosaic.
Yeah, Rob Key's come out since and said that sort of the big conversation was over at 90 minutes in a hotel room with Key, McCullum, Stokes and Anderson somewhere in Manchester. McCullum clearly thought the right thing to do was to come over to England, which seems like, yeah, seems apt, but I think it would have been a bit harsh or unfair on Anderson to be told over the phone or via Zoom, even more humiliatingly. So I think it was the right thing. Sounds like it was managed well. They sort of left it in his hands what his summer would look like. And I think this is probably quite a good way of doing a farewell if you're going to do one. I think that having an entire Jimmy farewell summer, which ended at Old Trafford or the Oval against Sri Lanka, and dragging it out over five or six tests, which, you know, let's be honest, are quite important for England in terms of their medium to long term plan. You know, that 2025-6 Ashes down under is suddenly only, what, 18 months away. It's going to come around in a hurry. So I think it's probably the right thing. It clearly, someone like Anderson deserves a send off. It would have been slightly odd if, you know, 2 months after his last test in Dharamsala, he'd suddenly come out and announce that he was done for good. I think it will end up working out quite well. Clearly, you know, Anderson might have been a bit frustrated about the fact that he didn't sort of manage the initial story, but he put his post out, he said his piece on Saturday, and also, to be honest, you know, it took 2 or 3 weeks after the initial meeting to get out, and I don't think there was ever a chance that something that big could be sat on for any longer than it was. So I think I don't think people will remember the manner of how the story broke in 10 years time. I think they'll remember the hopefully good send-off at Lords and him getting an apt farewell like Broad did last summer.
Yes, I mean, I think there'll be a lot of people will say that he deserves that, and he's been given that chance, Fish, to sort of pick his moment. But it's quite clear that England have made the move here. I mean, Key talking on I think on the BBC podcast last night, said we said it's time for us to move on. We're coming to a stage now. We've got to start looking to the future. And there was always a sense that Anderson was going to struggle to make this decision himself. And I guess even listening to him on his podcast saying I'm good, I feel good, didn't sound like he felt too good about it. But it is probably the right thing for all involved that someone has sort of made that call.
Yeah, specifically because Jimmy always talked about the day that he would retire was when he'd wake up for training and not want to do it. And obviously there's a lot of merit in that, and it's I suppose it's a fairly progressive way of thinking about it, because it's not about the glory, it's about the graft to get to the glory. Yeah. Mm. But we had got to the stage where when longevity becomes your thing, you end up running away from it. The end specifically, like you end up using that as your, you know, you look at that as your super strength, and I suppose that detracts from like why you've been around the game for so long, playing it at that level because of the skill. And you know, obviously we've mentioned the Ashes, you know, he did pretty well in India, but I suppose from England's point of view, they had to be a bit selfish with it, because if you want to build to the future, you kind of need to do that with as essentially all bowling lineup, sorry, everyone in your bowling lineup, like available for priming and for grooming towards that series. And the reason I say that is because for so long under Broad and Anderson, even when they deserved, you know, to, you know, all the accolades that thrown at them when they were at their very, very best, England was still in a situation where their third and fourth bowling picks would often suffer because they would be opening bowlers. So you'd have a situation where Chris Wokes would have to bowl with the old ball, where, you know, some maybe like a tall ball bat more set. Or, you know, another situation where, I suppose, prior to him actually taking the new ball, someone like Ollie Robinson comes in and has to earn that new ball. And you would have been in a situation, say, if Broad and Anderson had come through, where and England were also looking to the future, where, say, like Sam Cooke would be, you know, first change. And it doesn't quite work. So I actually think England had to be selfish in that regard and, you know, keep all the slots open, particularly with Robinson as someone who was initially groomed to take over and now deemed, I suppose, like, you know, the last cab off the rank, I suppose, given how his form has undulated. But, yeah, I think they've done it quite well. And even if there are teething problems this season, with all due respect to the teams England are playing, it's better to have teething problems against West Indies and Sri Lanka because you can cover for them in-game as well. You can't do that against India or Australia next year.
Yeah, and then they've sort of been quite clear about that. That is, those are the goals, the bigger series, should we say, down the line. On longevity, because, you know, we all like numbers, Anderson is going to go out on 188 tests, which is just an incredible number, behind only Sachin Tendulkar. He's currently bowled 39,877.
What a strike!
There's too many numbers here. 39,877. So he 20.3 more overs at Lords, which is pretty likely. Think over two innings will take him to 40,000 deliveries in Test cricket. The fourth man to that mark behind three spinners. Obviously, he's on 700 Test wickets. He could catch Warne on 708, and there's a Murlithan only beyond that. But we were talking about this before we came on. There's actually a whole other side of James Anderson that a lot of people remember. Well, Matt won't, but from back at the start when he was that sort of tearaway fast bowler that, you know, swung it around corners before he became Mr. Consistency Vision. And it'll be a chance to kind of reflect on all that as well, and the favourite spells and the things that made Jimmy Anderson the great Jimmy Anderson.
Yeah, there is an alternate timeline where he's just a quick who, as you said, like swings it at good pace. Say he doesn't get the remodelling of his action, which then, you know, I suppose takes a couple of years out and has him going back to his initial action. And you kind of wonder how, obviously, that Jimmy Anderson won't be as effective as this one, but I thought it'd be quite cool to look back and think of where he would have come in that regard. Because England have had those players in the past. So you look at someone like Ben Stokes. Ben Stokes could have been told at an early age, you know what, you could be like a properly good first change bowler here, and who knows like where his career goes. I think the thing with Jimmy, you could argue that he came at the right time, or certainly he lasted until the right time when you consider that so much of his longevity is built around being able to pick and choose games, central contracts in particular, where he was deemed as valuable enough to essentially be compensated for not playing any white ball cricket. That's initially how it was sold, when he was like, right, we're going to take this away from you from 2015, but you are just going to be a test bowler. And maybe it's easier to scratch that itch with a bowler than it is a batter, because, you know, Joe Root signed this latest contract thinking that he would be playing more white ball cricket, and it looks like he's not going to play any. And I suppose that kind of brings him his longevity. And evidently, he is very satisfied by what he's achieved in the game. And for someone who's achieved so much, I'm kind of looking forward to him finally packing it in, because now he can actually tell us what he thinks of these records. Because you know what players are like. They always say that records are for the end of your career. And it's like, great, we've got that now. Now tell us what you really think about them.
Well, and he's got this platform. There'll be plenty of opportunity to do commentary over the summer, podcasts. But Matt, he, on the subject really, I suppose, of convincing himself that it's the time to go, we're not clear as to whether he might actually keep playing on for Lancashire. He's said he hasn't had that conversation yet. England might want him around in the dressing room for the summer. Coach Jimmy, there isn't a fast bowling coach with the setup at the moment. So there's a bit to play with there.
Yeah, it sounds, you know, reading between the lines, like he's probably going to be involved in some kind of bowling coach or mentor role at some stage. I suppose the question is always whether or not it's healthy to have a bit of a period outside before you come straight back in. I remember about 2 years ago now when Owen Morgan stepped down as white ball captain and quit the game, and then you had this very strange transition where immediately after that he was, you know, on Sky talking to Joss Butler at the toss, and it felt like there was a slightly odd transition phase where Butler was trying to emerge from Morgan's shadow, but Morgan was omnipresent, therefore it was quite tricky. And I can imagine from the point of view of the, you know, maybe it would actually be quite a good thing from England's point of view for Anderson to step away for the rest of the summer and then the Pakistan and New Zealand tours, and then come back in the following year if they think that that's the right thing to do. Maybe it would be good to get someone in for the rest of the summer. I completely understand that, you know, you don't want to lose Anderson's experience, and he's clearly going to be, you know, there are a few better qualified to be a coach in terms of the playing experience side of things. But I do wonder if it would be useful for him to have a bit of a break and just step back from the game. I think that, you know, I don't think that's going to massively damage his credentials. And it might do some players some good to, you know, engage with new ideas and have new conversations with a new coach. Because there hasn't been a huge amount of change in terms of the backroom team since McCollum came in. It's been a couple of years now. See how it would be some value in refreshing. But, and yeah, who knows in terms of playing for Lancashire and Burnley, as he sort of hinted at having, wanting to do in the past. I find that pretty difficult to envisage, but I don't know, maybe he fancies it. Alistair Cook has obviously spent however many years playing for Essex after his test retirement, well, five seasons I think, and clearly loved it and wanted to keep going. I feel like it is slightly different with a fast bowler in terms of conditioning and the strain that you put on your body in a different way to an opening bat, but yeah, who knows, all power to him if he wants to do it, and Lancashire might need it given they're struggling badly in the Championship this year. But I sort of hope for Anderson's sake that he has the chance to take a good break this summer after that test and isn't sort of fully immersed in the game for the whole season and indefinitely.
The point about Morgan's a good one, not least because Morgan was a charismatic, talismanic captain who brought a lot of that team through. And I suppose in that situation, it only really negatively affects Butler, doesn't it? Because, you know, all the other players, when they're warming up, would go over to chat to him now that he's in a suit with his earpiece on, doing stuff for Sky, and were always happy to see him around because that's the kind of personality he was. And I suppose with Anderson, because he's been such a presence in that dressing room, you need him to have a bit more distance so that other people can come and fill that void, because he was, you know, he's... Think of all the different players that Anderson's played with. You know, like Adam Collins put up this thing of Jimmy's List A debut against Derek Randall. Now, obviously, it's not quite to the same extent in English cricket, but obviously he debuted with Rob Key, who was the one who tapped him on the shoulder as managing director to say, right, off you go, mate. And in that time, he has grown into this persona within the dressing room that, regardless of whether, I suppose, he's, you know, a vocal presence or not, he is such a huge presence that they're going to walk into that dressing room for the first time in the second test against West Indies and think, right, okay, what do we do now in terms of, you know, who is the guy we might turn to for a bit of a conversation about bowling plans or something like that, or just who sits in his spot? They seem inconsequential things, but they make up the whole dressing room dynamic. And I also think for that reason that, yeah, he should... I don't necessarily think him coming in as a bowling coach is a great idea. Mm. Obviously, he knows so much and his expertise is, you know, so unparalleled. I don't necessarily think that's the wisest thing in the world.
Because you want someone like a Mark Wood, for example, who spent the best part of 10 years playing Test cricket for England on and off, admittedly, in and out with injuries, but you want him to emerge as a leader of an attack. England have invested a lot in Wood. They've given him a three-year contract, which sort of takes him through to that 25-26 Ashes. He was obviously pivotal in Australia last time, England's best bowler in that series. Everything is set up for him to do the same again. If Anderson is there sort of looming around, I don't know, I feel like from Wood's point of view, surely he wants the opportunity to become number one.
Well, Anderson also has to learn how to use the dog thrower.
Of course.
As he admitted the other day. The irony here, talking about the succession planning for both Broad and Anderson, I mean, consecutive home tests, they're both paying out, England losing 1,300 test wickets. And Vish, they're not really any closer than they were when they're picking Stephen Finn, Graham Onions and Tim Preston in 2012 to knowing what the attack looks like without both of those players. Wood mentioned is 34, and obviously the injury record doesn't really need going into. However much England, like, you know, cotton wool him, and he's going to the World T20, T20 World Cup next. Chris Wokes is 35, and
he's never going to play away again.
And yeah, as an overseas bowler, probably isn't on the list for that Ashes tour.
I mean, that's conceivably that's the next retirement this summer, isn't it? Close.
yeah, possible.
Generally, yeah.
With the ruthlessness of
well, I mean, this he might actually choose it himself because he's a writing on the wall. But sorry, go on. Yeah.
But yeah, who are the three lining up? The three quicks for that second test at Nottingham in July, post Anderson. I mean, and obviously we've doubts about Robinson's durability. He was the next nailed on guy. Yeah. There's a lot of names that could be thrown in at this point.
There's such a long list of names. I think if you just look at players who have some form of contract, there's three guys which are, I think, Fisher, Mahmood and John Turner on fast bowling development contracts, and there's Atkinson, Carr, Potts on multi-year contracts. Tung has a contract. Robinson has a contract. Archer might come back into the reckoning in 2025. Then Key last night was name-checking Ollie Stone, Dylan Pennington, Sam Cook. There is a massive list. The question is, how do you sort of, I suppose, make the value judgment between them? Do you go on recent form only? Do you look down the track? Do you say, like, how do you balance out all of those skill sets? Because there's some very different bowlers in there.
Yeah.
And it's from a selection point of view, I can see how it'd be very exciting, but also quite daunting to make that choice between, you know, quite often some similar but also quite unproven players who don't necessarily have that much first-class experience, let alone international experience. So I think it's really tough. I think that I think there is a decision to be made a bit around Wokes this summer, because he isn't probably going to, like, I can't see him touring Australia in 25-26. Does that mean that, similar to Anderson, England try and move on from him?
Even though he was man of the series
last year. Yeah, despite the fact he's still clearly performing, then would... There's constantly the fitness question, but if he comes back from the T20 World Cup in one piece, then he probably should be leading the attack this summer. Robinson, who knows what status he will be in terms of his fitness by the end of June, heading into those series. He's in a place where his test average is still brilliant, low 20s in test cricket, but his durability, his robustness is constantly in question. And then the younger guys coming through, do you take a bit of a punt? Someone like Potts seems to be developing really well. It's obviously a couple of years since his debut, but there's so many different names out there. And I do feel as though it could, you know, England suddenly having looked like they're quite a settled side for a while under McCullum and Stokes for the best part of sort of 15 tests now have been pretty settled. You're suddenly looking at all these names and it could be a revolving door this summer. So they need to make sure that they, by the time they get to the first post-Anderson test, the second test against West Indies, have a pretty clear strategy in mind as to who they're going to back, who they're going to give opportunities to through the summer. And then they can go to Pakistan and New Zealand and keep getting games into them. Because you don't want to turn up to the first test at the Gabba with someone who's got four caps in the attack.
Yeah. And I suppose, like, if you look at the way this England management team have done things, you know, since they came in 2022... they've been really good with debutants.
Yeah.
Whether it's been picking them or, I suppose, blooding them essentially behind the scenes and ahead of these series, whether it's, you know, the spinners in India or someone like Potts, you know, way back in 2022, even the way that someone like Atkinson, who I appreciate hasn't played a test yet, but the way they were with him in India was, it kind of spoke of, I suppose, you know, understanding that when you're a new player in international cricket, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be quite daunting, particularly in test cricket. And I think, you know, with that in mind, there's probably never been a better situation to come in as a fast bowler replacing two legends of the game. Because also bear in mind, like, when you talk about the revolving door, we kind of think back to the opening position, but that was a mess. I mean, that was such a mess. And they messed up umpteen times in that situation, whether it was giving someone too many games or giving someone too few. And at the very least, you come into this team and you know you're going to play a certain amount. And I think there's a lot to be said for that, because whoever eventually gets the nod will know they have it for, you know, at least the rest of the summer.
Right, let's try a segue that ties in Anderson's farewell, West Indies tour of England, and the first few weeks of the County Championship as well. Hey, it's almost like we plan these things. Here is Kemar Roach talking after Surrey's victory over Warwickshire earlier this week.
I'm sure you would have seen the news about Jimmy Anderson over the weekend. Heading into that first test, I guess it's up to you guys to sort of ruin that. Sort something for him and try and beat England at Lords.
Yeah, obviously he's a great fast bowler. Probably one of the greatest for sure. Started to see him go, but you all know he can't play forever. But he's done fantastically for England, and he deserved whatever he's what he's going to get. But obviously, first test match against us. Hopefully, yeah, I just said we ruin it. But all in all, he's highly respected. He's always given me a good advice as well when we speak, and I think he'll go down as definitely one of the greatest to ever do it. So I want to wish him all the best as after that test match, and hopefully he enjoys his afterlife after cricket.
In terms of you personally, Bat said you've been working pretty hard over the past couple of weeks. Did you feel like maybe having started the season a little slower in terms of the number of wickets? You had work to do and feel like you're in a really good spot now?
Yeah, you know, obviously you want to have a great start every season, but it doesn't always work like that as cricket. You put the work in, but you don't always get the results. But I had some things I had to work on for myself personally. I saw it, watching some video clips, and obviously Jane Durbat being in the new bowling coach, she showed me some stuff. So I think I had to work some stuff for the last couple of weeks, and it's good to know that at 35 I can still have things to work on. It's cricket, you know, every day is not the same, but every year is not the same. But it's the hard work you put in, it's the results you're going to get back, and it's good to help the team in today, and hopefully you can help them in a couple more games.
What sort of thing was Jay showing you? Was it stuff, technical stuff?
Actually? Yeah, it's more technical stuff in terms of my balance and stuff at the crease. So, yeah, I think it's still a work in progress, but it's better. So they can see the results are showing. So hopefully when I get it back in tip-top shape, I probably get some more results and bigger results.
When you have a summer like this where you obviously play for Surrey, but you've also got in the back of your mind, I imagine, July test series. Are you thinking about that at all now, or is it just building with Surrey and trying to get that first?
That's basically
time.
What it is, building with Surrey. Get myself in some good physical shape, good mental space, and then obviously when I get to that, West Indies store and stuff, I just build on that and obviously expand on that, because that's what I'm paid to do too. So it's just about enjoying cricket at the moment. I'm not really thinking too far ahead, just enjoy the moment and just keep working hard.
You're not the only West Indies player, fast bowler, to be playing county cricket at the moment. Jaden Seale's been brilliant for Sussex. Jason Holder's in the runs now, taking some wickets. You kind of, is this the best group of, potentially the best kind of fast bowling attack that West Indies are bringing to England while you've been in the side? Like, you think about Alzari, Shamar Joseph, some pretty good bowlers in that group.
It's a very highly talented group, I think, very highly skillful as well. I don't know if it's the best, obviously. Obviously, we have Curtly Ambrose and
been coming a few years now. So.
Yeah, it could be tough to say. A couple guys have been there. Shannon Gable has been good for us as well too. So. But I think all in all, this group right now is pretty skillful. Shamar Joseph is still young, only played 2 test matches, but he had a really, really good start. But I think as a core, it's good to know that next guy can obviously put the work in for you if you're not having a great day. So I think once we come together, we plan and we obviously build together. We haven't played together yet. Jason hasn't played in a bit. Jaden has been injured for a couple of years. And obviously Shamar is a starter. So it's all about coming together, get that gelling together, and then obviously let's see how it goes from there. But I'm pretty happy with the group of fast bowlers that we have right now in the West Indies. I think you always wanted to have an X factor in the team. We had it with Shannon Gibb for a couple of years and myself, but I think Jaden Seale's now and Shamar Joseph and Alzari as well, they've added a lot of X factor to the team as a bowling unit. So on any given day they can have a great spell and they can be devastating, and that's what you want. Just want to have it as much as consistent as possible to have those great days. But it's cricket you're playing, so you know every day is not given. But I think to have 3 guys like that in a team, and the captain should have some ease in terms of team selection, in terms of who he wants for what given day, what given surface. So as a group, I think, we're pretty confident. And England is always our biggest series. There are the most test matches against England, which is 3. So we always want to put up a good fight, put up a good show. And coming to England, we haven't won a test series in England for quite a while. So it's good to come over here with some confidence. And hopefully we can do it this time.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Matt, as you wrote after speaking to Kimar the other day, West Indies haven't won here since 1988. They have suckered England on their last couple of tours. Famous win at Headingley and Southampton during COVID. Obviously, we've talked about all the brouhaha around Anderson's farewell at Lords. What are the chances that England walk into this just a little bit complacent about the opponent and get done again?
Yeah, well, I think West Indies will be competitive. And as you mentioned, you sort of write a West Indies team off against England at your peril and more generally as well. I think after that first test of their series in Australia in sort of December, January time, there was definitely some thought of it being one of the weakest West Indies test teams in living memory. And then they went and upset the Aussies at the Gabba, as we saw. So I think particularly that seam bowling attack, very strong. Roach looked back to his best for Surrey the other day, was obviously their match winner, reverse swinging the old ball, had a quiet start to the season, but is back in form now. Jaden Seals has been taking bags of wickets for Sussex. Azari Joseph and Shamar Joseph both have a lot of pace and bring a bit of excitement, bring something different. And Jason Holders, obviously, he wasn't involved in the tour in Australia because he was playing franchise cricket, but has been playing red ball cricket for both Barbados and more recently Worcester, and was in the runs the other day with a quick 100. So there's going to be serious competition for the seam bowling spots. I think their batting's a little fragile, but then again, against an inexperienced England attack, at least after that first test, or an inexperienced England attack plus a 43-year-old who averaged in the 80s last summer. 41-year-old, I should say.
you don't need to make him any older.
You never know.
Well, certainly the early weeks of the county championship have been good for England's opponents later this summer. It's actually quite a long way off still, sort of 2 months before that test. We've talked about kind of what the attack might look like. Who knows who's going to be fit and available for selection. But there is that going to be that extra excitement. And the other element of it, I suppose, to look forward to is Baswell 2.0 and what this, how the team move on, develop, evolve. Is the removal of Anderson from the equation a sign of sort of ruthlessness that England talked about in the wake of defeat in India? And, is that the hard edge that we should expect from the second half of McCullum Stokes' kind of tenure?
I mean, I've not really thought of it like that, but I suppose you could extrapolate it to a decision like that. I think when I left India, I think I wrote about the changing of the guard within the team, which felt like more of a natural thing because there's a core of 25-year-old, someone like Ducky in their late 20s, who, thinking about myself there, someone like Duckett, who's in their late 20s, who have essentially been around the team long enough to take it forward and are less reliant on the likes of, Anderson, Broad, who just went, at the end of that last summer, someone like Bairstow, who we know we're pretty sure we're going to see again in a test shirt after the India tour, and Anderson as well, who, to be honest, was a bit more of a peripheral figure in India anyway. I think what will be interesting, though, is that management core, sort of rather the leadership core, as is always the way in test teams, is concentrated with batters. With batters who, for example, Crawley and Duckett have been in pretty good nick for the last year, 18 months or so. And then someone like Ollie Pope, who's vice-captain, who started the India tour with a bang with that century in Hyderabad and has basically fallen off a cliff, right down to the fact that his county form seems to have struggled. The one thing you bank on with Ollie Pope is goes back to Surrey, scores a couple of hundreds, what are you worried about? And it feels like maybe that'll be a talking point coming into this West Indies series, particularly with the bowling attack that, Bowler just ran through there. Bear in mind, there's a new keeper to pick as well. That's certainly the intimation we got from McCullum. Is that going to be Jamie Smith, who peeled off 100? against Warwickshire just gone, but also isn't keeping? Is it going to be someone like Phil Sol, who might have a conversation during the World Cup where they think, you know what, you're hitting them damn well. We need to. You've got the hot hand here. We might as well put some gloves on them. Like, that is the kind of thing that we'll probably find out. And from then on, who knows? But there is a lot of flux within the batting lineup in particular anyway, or potential flux, that West Indies could, you know, could certainly use their advantage.
One area where there's a bit more certainty, I mean, Ben Stokes is obviously going to still be the captain. He's going to be back as an all-rounder, it seems, and he's expected to play, Matt, in the county championship for Durham. I mean, clearly there won't be too much weight placed on his returns, but that's an important step forward. He obviously retired from, or he's opted out of selection for the T20 World Cup. So him getting back on the field in whites and kind of preparing will help England's decision making for the rest of the summer.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, he could play quite a big role with the ball if he's actually back fit again, because, you know, Stokes is probably. There have been times in his captaincy because of the fact he's obviously had this chronic knee injury where he's probably been under. People have probably forgotten how good he can be as a change bowler and lightening the load, making the other seamers in the attack more effective because they can bowl shorter spells, all that sort of thing. Like in India, it would have been such a big difference, I think. Not necessarily to the result, but to how England's team looked if you had the option of the extra seam bowler. You know, just having the option of a genuine frontline bowler batting in the top seven, which England didn't really have at any point in the series. They obviously used Root as a spinner quite often, but the team never had quite the right balance, really. There are very few test teams now that are successful with just four bowlers, and so it proved for England over there. So, yeah, it seems like positive news for Stokes. I think it'll be interesting, actually, to see whether he plays any games in the Blast during the T20 World Cup, because obviously after this, there's a couple more championship games before the Blast starts at the end of May. But then there is a bit of a gap in June before the championship resumes heading into that. So will he, you know, the idea that Stokes, having opted out of the T20 World Cup, might then keep his bowling workload up by bowling four overs for Durham in the Blast. It could happen. It would seem counterintuitive, but you can just about work out how it might make sense.
Might help sell a few tickets.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm sure the Riverside will be absolutely. I'll be delighted up there. But I think it sounds broadly positive on Stokes. But I suppose that, you know, we'll have to wait and see. I think it's easy to sort of underestimate how big a challenge it is at the stage he is in his career to come back from surgery, and also to come back to bowling fast after quite a long time of not really having done much bowling.
Yeah, he'll be after Lord's the leading active wicket taker. Available for selection.
Yeah.
He's 198, isn't he? He's coming up for 200 test
That's
wickets.
A great
one,
yeah.
Well, he's 199 now, isn't he? Was it 198?
I think he needed three, didn't he?
Right, okay.
And then he got rid of Sharma, Rohit Sharma, with his first ball of the winter.
That's extraordinary, yeah. What I thought that is.
There's your next attack leader. There's lots of time to look for test pointers in the championship before July. But, Vish, the shape of the season already seems to be set. Surrey won three on the bounce. Jamie Smith, the latest sort of headline act there, and will be in that England selection discussion. Essex lost in the round that Surrey didn't play on a green seamer down at Taunton. We've had this discussion before, but it's looking all right for the Ray.
It is, yeah. You kind of have to get your kicks from the bottom of Division One, where suddenly Lancashire have had the basically destined for relegation now.
Yeah, that's mad, actually. Lancashire's, I don't know, it feels like all their senior players, they look like they have a really good, and have had for a while, a core of batters, especially Wells, Jennings, Bohannon, who should be churning out and have for a while churning out runs in Division One, and they can't seem to get one between them at the moment.
Yeah, they kind of lost the glue of Croft and Villas, who I suppose maybe when you look back, you think, right, maybe they dug them out of trouble more times than we think. Because you just think of Jennings and Bohannon, and in particular, as two constants, really.
Yeah.
Certainly Wells' emergence as well. They have a lot of senior players there, and actually, it's been the younger players who've, you know, had to, I suppose, put up more of a fight. Certainly, that was the case in the last round, and I suppose it doesn't help when the kid you let go is suddenly bearded and a man kind of
looking
through. Yeah,
Hasib Hamid carrying his bat on the pitch for every minute.
Almost 24 hours.
Something like 540 overs or something like that.
Do you reckon McCollum's seen 24 hours of curly cricket?
350 overs, maybe.
It's one for me game.
It is extraordinary, though, because Lang's made, I would say, quite a surprise appointment as coach in Dale Benkenstein over the winter.
Because I think we trailed, sorry to interrupt, but I think we trailed a few names pre-Christmas, didn't we?
Well, Trott was linked with it. I think Silverwood was linked with it. Yeah. There are a few names floating around who were sort of recent international coach or current international coaches. And then to appoint Benkenstein, who was coach of winless Gloucester in the Championship last season, he's obviously, you know, he has a track record in county cricket of success with Hampshire and Durham back in his playing days. But yeah, suddenly he's staring down what 14 games winless last season, 5 at the start of this year. He's suddenly on this huge run of games without a win, and I can imagine that must be a real challenge for a coach, let alone for the players that are trying to be motivated by this guy and suddenly second guessing everything that they, you know, that they think they know. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that one plays out, because Lancashire, not too long ago, I think 2 seasons ago, 22, they finished second in every competition. So to suddenly be bottom of Division One and such a big club, I think they're probably second in terms of finances, size as a club, to potentially be threatened with relegation is quite worrying.
And winless Gloucestershire have won a game for the first time.
Crazy.
Since Benkenstein left. But yeah, it will be interesting. And Lang's also obviously going to lose a load of players for the Blast, so it's not like they're going to be a T20 powerhouse, which they have been a bit in recent years, but they're going to have no Butler, no Salt, no Livingston. The overseas market's been really tough for the Blast because of the T20 World Cup, and Lyon was made unavailable for that, so they've got, I think, Chris Green and Tom Bruce as their overseas players, who are a little bit B-list, you'd have to say. So yeah, we'll be really interesting, and I think there's big pressure on it, Langs.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The international summer got underway at the weekend amid the Jimmy Anderson retirement news, with England women knocking over Pakistan in front of 12,000 people at Edgbaston. Pakistan men obviously over here as well. That series starting in about 10 days' time, and all that is building up towards the T20 World Cup. Matt, England players of the IPL have started to filter back. Some of them had a lot of success. Liam Livingston, not so much, nursing an injury, but not one that we're expecting to be sort of serious or put his participation in the World Cup in doubt.
Yeah, slightly curious one. Livingston sort of announced himself that he was heading home a few days before schedule, because England are going to link up in Leeds this weekend ahead of the first game in at Headingley on next Wednesday as we speak. But yeah, he's had a really quiet winter, Livingston. I was thinking back, actually, obviously, England playing Pakistan in a T20 series. That was when Livingston had his big international breakthrough 3 years ago. The game at Headingley was the one where he famously cleared the stand at the far end and hit Harris Ralph about 120 metres. That was his breakthrough summer, his golden year, where he became the new man in for England's white ball teams and was the guy that was going to take the teams forward. But he sort of went missing at the World Cup. I think he averaged about 12. Before Christmas, he had an okay but not great tour to the West Indies in December, and then since then, really quiet time in franchise cricket. Surprisingly so, I'd say, given he's previously been pretty dominant at that level. Went to the SA20, played a couple of games at the ILT20, and then at the IPL, played 7 games, was sort of in and out for Punjab. Had a muscle injury in one of the games, which ruled him out of a couple more. Then lost his place. And just, it feels to me, I think we've spoken about Livingston before on this pod, but it does feel to me like this is a big tournament for sort of his legacy almost. He's achieved a lot already. He's a T20 World Cup winner. He's got a test cap. He's done a fair bit in his career, but he's now into his 30s. It does feel like he really needs to find some form heading into this competition. I think it wouldn't actually be the worst thing if he gets a couple of opportunities up the order usually finishes, and I think Livingston's potentially been guilty of this. You sort of end up doing that role in every team you play for. You don't face many balls. But actually, maybe England should consider giving him a chance at four or five in this series, just for even for a game or two, just to give him the opportunity to face a lot of balls. I think he's also someone who should benefit a lot from Kieran Pollard coming in, because if you want someone to mentor you as a T20 finisher, there's no one better in the world.
I think you mentioned that before about, like, yeah, when England got into a couple of bad situations, like within tournaments, where you're relying on people who haven't actually batted a lot. To get you out of the hole. And it's fascinating to think back to 2 years ago. He was on the field when England when Stokes hit the winning run.
Yeah, he was at the other end, yeah.
And then went to the UAE for a bit of a blowout, and then met up with the England test team in Abu Dhabi to prepare for a Pakistan tour where he made his debut and then injured his knee on the first day. But that was a fascinating period in his career. Yeah.
He's had such a... the past 2 years, he's just had a constant string of muscle injuries.
Yeah,
and I think the one that sort of seemed to kick it all off was the real freak one, actually, just before that World Cup, when he twisted his ankle, shattered his ankle on the curb, basically, and didn't sell some real... I think he did some ligament damage. Then he sort of rushed back for that World Cup, then played that test and pretty quickly got injured during that test debut. And then ever since then, it feels like he's been sort of rushing back from injuries and trying to find the right time. So I hope that, actually looking forward to that Pakistan series, I hope that he doesn't rush back for game one to prove his fitness and to get some match practice. I hope that he takes as long as he actually needs. If he does have sounds like it's a pretty minor knee issue from what I've heard. But if he has something that's worth resting, then actually rest it.
Is Pollard on the deck for the Pakistan series?
I think that's all being worked out at the moment. I think he's due to go home straight after the IPL because MI are going to be knocked out, and I think their last game is Friday. So I think it's a question of whether he might pop over for a couple of games. But I think his contract mainly covers the T20 World Cup, and they're just going to hope that he might dip in for a bit, but we'll see.
Everything's movable, the schedules being what they are.
Yeah.
Obviously, the series, the Pakistan series, important for nailing down roles and getting the squad, you know, all pulling in the right direction for the World Cup. But no more important than hopefully Vish seeing Jofra Archer in an England shirt again. He is expected to play, I think, for Sussex Twos at some point this week. He's been bowling back in club cricket in Barbados. But this is the crunch moment approaching.
I leant over to Vish the other day, and he was watching a live Instagram video of Jofra and Chris Jordan bowling in a net in Barbados. So Vish knows better than anyone else.
Yeah. You've been following this closely.
I think Phil Sol messaging bowl him a bump. Some poor clubby. The thing I keep going back to is that we have been here before with Jofra. And so there's a natural wariness to him being named in that squad. And then as I say that, named in the squad, England have never done that before with Jofra. They've tried to work him in. There was obviously a bit of miscommunication, misunderstanding, whatever you want to call it, about the role he was supposed to play in the 2023 50-over World Cup. Is he reserve? Is he travelling? Turns out he was just travelling. He was a tourist, essentially. He bowled a bit when he was in Australia. When he was in India for 3 or 4 days. But the fact that they've named him in the squad outright gives a sense that whatever we have seen, there's a bigger, you know, there's a better, a broader understanding of where he's at in his game. And it feels like everyone's comfortable enough to name him in the 15. And that actually, this is not too different from him tuning up anyway. This isn't necessarily a recovery from... He's not necessarily proving his fitness. He's gaining match fitness, which is the way they're looking at this... in this T20 series with Pakistan. But it's going to be fascinating, because the thing that players always tell you is it's only when they get into that match situation, when it is an international and there's something on the line, that they really do push themselves. Stokes, I mean, he's the best, the most recent example of this, when he talked about how his knee was affecting his fielding. And post-operation, he hadn't really thrown himself into fielding, but he would know as soon as there was an occasion in the field to do something, that he will find out how robust his knee is. Lo and behold, first test, he runs out, Ravi Jadeja. Second test, takes a blinding catch against, I can't remember who now. But we are only going to find out how much better his elbow is, how more robust he is, when I don't know, someone pumps him for four and he feels like he's going to have to ramp it up. Like, that's only when you're, you know, and when it's in front of a packed crowd. So, I mean, for that, for, you know, from that point of view, the intrigue is great. But as, you know, given where we are now, I think there is an, you have to have an element of trust that they're doing the right thing. Because also, there's, as Archer said so himself, he can't go through it again. And there is a duty of care here that you'd hope England would have done, and it sounds like they have done. You know, Rob Key in his interview with the BBC podcast talked about how Jofra's sending him all his videos on YouTube of him batting. Oh, sorry, or rather of his games, and telling him, right, skip to the 38-minute mark for me batting. So there's clearly a lot of dialogue there. It's clearly, you know, it's clearly good-natured. It's clearly comfortable, which is the most important thing, which hasn't necessarily always been the case with Jofra's interactions with England. So, yeah, by and large, broadly promising, yeah.
Well, we wish him luck when he turns out for Sussex 2s at Beckenham, and wish the Kent 2s batters luck as well. okay, that's a wrap for this one. There are still a couple of months to go before the first test of the summer and the last featuring James Anderson, so time to get your Oh Jimmy Jimmy coming out perfectly. We'll be back next week to preview the T20i series with Pakistan. Until then, my thanks to Matt and Vish, and to you all for tuning in to the Switch It podcast on ESPNcricInfo.com.